Good morning. We have today a great conversation about Dr. Yum, Dr. Yum Project. We have with us pediatrician Namali Fernando and Jen Miller, who's the cooking program's coordinator with the Dr. Yum Project. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I have heard Dr. Yum around the Fredericksburg area a lot, but I really don't know a lot about the Dr. Yum Project. And I'm thinking today there are listeners who also don't really know. So tell us, what is Dr. Yum and how did it get started?
Well, we're happy that you've been hearing a lot about Dr. Yum. We are an organization that really started because as a pediatrician, I was seeing a lot of children with diet-related illness. So a lot of kids that I was seeing were either overweight or obese, about 30%, which is what we're seeing nationally and also what I was seeing here in Fredericksburg. And that was dismaying enough, but I was seeing also a lot of kids of normal weight who were suffering with a lot of different symptoms that were related to that average American kid-friendly diet. So a lot of constipation and bedwetting and anxiety and ADHD that really, when you connect the dots, a lot of times came back to a poor diet. So I sort of started to figure out, how can I get these families in my practice eating better? So we developed a website of kid-tested recipes, which is dryum.org. And then that sort of snowballed into a greater effort in a nonprofit organization called the Dr. Yum Project, where we get out into the community and teach families how to cook.
When did you begin this?
So the website started in 2011, and I recruited an army of little tasters around our area, and we call them tiny tasters, and they just tested recipes. And we would post their very honest responses on our website. And it was kind of an experiment to see how these kids could enjoy real food and not the kid-friendly food that we think that kids will only eat, but actual local seasonal produce and real food that was good for them.
Well, and how do you have that background? Did you love to cook beforehand?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was very blessed because I was brought up in a family where my mother cooked. And that was sort of our family culture, is we had a home-cooked meal every night. What I was seeing, though, is a lot of the families in my practice, that was not their culture. So sort of my greater mission was to bring back that culture of really making food important and a priority so that kids could be healthier.
A lot of people might cook every night, but they might just be opening prepared meals.
Right. We call that fixing food.
Okay. Versus
cooking food, right? So a lot of the young moms I was seeing, they weren't accustomed to actually turning on their stove or, you know, their oven. They could use their microwave and fix a meal, but really cooking and chopping an onion and making a soup, that was something that was not really part of their culture. So we wanted to bring that back. And so we started with, what are the basic things that you need in your kitchen to cook a meal? What are the tools that you need? What are the ingredients that you need? And we put those things on the website, too. And also, how do you parent in this world where there's so much junk food and there's this junk food culture? And how do you break through that and have your own family culture that's a little bit more wellness-oriented? It's difficult. It's a challenge these days. But that's what Jen and I are really trying to bring about in the work that we do.
And Jen is the cooking program's coordinator.
I am.
What do you do in that position?
Oh, I do a lot of really fun things. I get to spend time with kids and teaching them basic things like knife skills, but also the enjoyment of food and how broccoli tastes and how it crunches in your mouth. And I also get to speak with the parents and help them through any issues they're having of course, always the time issue. Everyone wants to say, I don't have time, which
right.
We have a zero tolerance for.
Right.
Because
okay.
We're both very busy, too. So we get to talk to the parents about the issues going on in their lives as well.
This, to me, seems almost an overwhelming project because you have children, you have parents. There's a lot of education to go on. So where did you begin and how did this begin to grow?
So it first started with recipes, and then what I did is I said to myself, we have all this great local produce here in Virginia, so let me teach kids how to cook using that produce. So we developed 4 cooking programs for age 7 to 12 based on what was coming out of the farms in Virginia. So we started, and I didn't have a kitchen, so we borrowed the kitchen at St. George's Episcopal Church, and we had camps for kids where we would teach them local produce. And we had a winter, spring, summer, and fall session. And that became very, very successful. So we decided we would sort of take that a little bit further. And a lot of the preschool families were, the families with preschoolers asked us for lessons. So we developed a preschool curriculum where we teach teachers in preschools how to teach kids about nutrition. So the first year we had 8 schools that participated, and now we have 16 schools in Central Virginia, schools and daycares that participate, and we give them a free curriculum and we train their teachers on how to teach nutrition in schools. And then this year we actually, last year we moved into our own space, our own kitchen. So I have a pediatrics practice that I started where really nutrition and prevention is the center of my mission. And in that space, we have a 1,000-square-foot teaching kitchen and a teaching garden that I share between my practice and the nonprofit. So I'm able to have both hats and be in the same space supervising both missions.
Where is that located? I'm sorry.
That is in Spotsylvania on the corner of Courthouse Road and Levels Road on Georgetown Drive.
It sounds like it began just very small, and word of mouth, it grew and is growing. Because I know I hear so much about Dr. Yum, Dr. Yum. What is Dr. Yum?
I'm glad to hear that.
Why was your focus starting with the children, teaching the children versus the parents?
We really like getting at children because sometimes children are the best agents of change. So we've found after our cooking camps, the kids will go home and they'll serve vegetables to their reluctant dad.
Yes. Role reversal.
Exactly. Right. And in the 7 to 12 age range, we really cook without parents. We cook with the children independently. So parents come at the end and they get to try some of the recipes that the kids have made. And it makes for a better dynamic. The kids are able to influence each other in really positive ways. And then they can go home and influence their parents or their younger siblings. We did realize, though, however, as we went forward with our mission, that we do have to educate the families. So, for instance, in our preschool curriculum, we have a parent manual. So the parents really know what the approach should be at home when they're introducing new fruits and vegetables to their maybe selective preschoolers. And this makes for a more well-rounded experience. So the parents and the children are both on board.
You mentioned how to introduce to a picky eater.
Yes.
Give us a tip. If you want to introduce broccoli or Brussels sprouts or a fruit,
number one tip, serve it with a smile. So many parents will make a face because of their own taste preferences, and the research shows that if you serve a vegetable or fruit with a smile, that the children are more likely to eat it. So you have to sort of be the model. And even if you may not love it yourself, serve it with a smile.
We're going to come back and hear more tips from the Dr. Yum Project with pediatrician Namali Fernando and Jen Miller. You're listening to Town Talk on WFEA News Talk 1230. talking about the Dr. Yum project with pediatrician Namali Fernando and Jen Miller, who's the cooking program's coordinator with that project. Before we went to the break, we were talking about introducing healthy foods to children, fruits, vegetables, some tips for doing that. And you said serve it with a smile.
Yes.
And you had some other ideas, too, to share.
Yes. So for many kids, when you introduce a new fruit or vegetable, they are entering an experience that's completely new. So we always tell parents to give kids an anchor. So if they're trying a parsnip for the first time, they want to know what it tastes like before they put it in their mouth. So explain to them maybe a familiar taste that they know. So a parsnip is sort of like a carrot. It tastes a little bit more floury, but it has the same texture. And that way they go into it knowing what they're getting into. So that's another helpful tip.
So that means if the parent hasn't tasted a parsnip, they need to do it first.
They do. They do. And then what about our dinosaur teeth trick?
Oh, it's so important, especially with our smaller kids. We have them open their mouth and show us their dinosaur teeth. And especially when we have our kale, our dinosaur kale chips,
yes.
We have them put it back on their molars because that prevents gagging, which can sometimes come up for picky eaters.
Really?
Yes.
And it works for adults as well.
What's causing that gag reflex? Is it just the thinking they're not going to like it?
Well, trying from the front of the mouth more easily elicits that gag. So if you can deposit the food by chewing in the back of the mouth, it's less likely to elicit that gag reflex. And it helps the mouth understand with the deep pressure sensors where that food is in their mouth, and it's more easy to swallow. So, and also you can give them a little bit of a chaser with a little water and a straw. And then once they've had that bite, they can swish it down with a little bit of water, and that helps too.
What happens if you have a child try a food and they genuinely don't like it?
Keep practicing.
They have to keep practicing. And we liken it to reading. Mm-hmm. So it takes many, many years for a child to learn to read. And I always ask children, did you learn to read overnight? And they say no. And I said, how do you do that? How did you learn to read? And they say, I practice. And it's the same thing. And parents, I think, need to understand that too. If it took more than a couple of days or a couple of tries for a child to learn their alphabet and learn to read, they would keep trying. They would keep going. They would get a specialist if they needed to, if the child was having a hard time. The same rules need to apply with feeding, too. It doesn't just take one or two tries. The research shows it can take 15 or 20 tries of a new fruit or vegetable before a child will accept it. That means you've got to sit there and watch the child say yuck and spit it out 15 or 20 times. And the average American family gives up after only 3 to 5 tries. And that's why we have a nation full of children who don't eat their vegetables. We don't have that understanding that it takes a long time and a lot of patience.
And do you have to offer it all at one sitting, or can it be we try a little bit this time and then you offer it at different sittings?
Absolutely. So you can offer it over a long period of time in different ways. So you try it, you don't like it, put it away for a little bit, bring it back. You can also try it in different ways. So if the child doesn't like it raw, maybe they'll like it steamed or grilled.
That's
or
true.
Dipped in a different food. We use a concept called food chaining. So chain a food that they don't like to a texture or taste that they do. So dip it in something they like, a flavor they like, or prepare it in a texture that they like. And that makes it easier.
That's true. Texture is also very big.
Right.
Talk to us about parenting for wellness.
Oh, Jen.
Oh, this is
our
my
favorite class.
Yes, this is something it's a project that we undertook to help. We recognize that no matter what we said to the kids in one-on-one, we really needed the parents who buy the groceries and make the decisions to get on board as well. And what we discovered is that the parents were lacking some very basic nutrition education. So we began with that. And now we have an 8-week program that includes 8 parent weeks that we get together and we meet. And we don't only talk about nutrition, but we also cook with them every single time. And they get homework every single time. And they have to make the meals at home, except they have to make it their own way. So they learn to vary recipes. And then twice during that 8 weeks, we bring the whole family in and do a family cooking class. And we've seen just
tremendous, tremendous progress.
We are floored each time. Someone will come in and we'll think, oh, this is amazing, the difference that this makes, just this simple class.
Can you give us an example? Do you have a family pictured in your head right now that you've seen them come in eating one way and through the class what the change has been like?
We had a family who was seen by me actually as a patient who was struggling with his weight. He's a young school-aged child and was struggling with his weight, and we recommended this program, and the family came in really committed to learning, and they did such good work. They did the recipes every week. They posted their recipes on our social media, and they really embraced it. So I was able to follow up with this family. It's been about 3 months now, and this little guy came in for cold symptoms, and I just peeked at his growth curve and noticed this dramatic decrease in his body mass index. He was pretty obese when he started, and now his body mass index is getting near the normal range. So you don't see that kind of progress without, I think, the intensive counseling and instruction that you get in the Parenting for Wellness class. And it's a lot of fun. The last class we did was a family session where we taught families how to incorporate curry spices into their family repertoire. And it was amazing to see these little kids just devouring curry.
Yes. With whole hands in the dish.
Just curry. And I think those families will take that, those instruction and make it part of their daily routine. And that's really the key, is making us part of your daily routine, making our recipes part of the normal. And they've really done that, and it's been wonderful. It's a supportive group, too. So we come back and we talk about our food wins. What did we do that was great this week? And we also talk about our parenting wins. What I've learned over the years is a lot of things go awry when it comes to feeding because of misguided parenting. So parents wanting to do the right thing, but paradoxically maybe making the wrong choice when it came to parenting. So we talk about what did we do well this week in terms of parenting, and I think that's been very helpful as well.
What would be a wrong choice a parent might make that you...
So an example would be if a child refuses a food, we as parents, we want to feed kids, right? We want to give them food. That's our parental instinct. But sometimes kids aren't hungry, right?
Right.
And if we offer them a healthy food and they don't accept it, instead of feeling like we have to feed them and reaching for the goldfish and crackers and the fruit snacks, we can say, you know what, they're not hungry. And maybe if they don't eat at the next meal, they'll be hungrier and they'll want to eat that healthy food that we offer. So it's counterintuitive, but in the end, that instinct was really the wrong instinct when it comes to establishing healthy habits.
I've seen friends of mine do that where they are very concerned that their child has not eaten lunch and they're pushing all afternoon, food, food, food. But it's just that they're not hungry.
And kids are very good. They come with this innate ability to know how much food they need to eat. For the most part, a typical developing child knows, I'm not hungry and I don't need to eat. They don't take the external cues like we do and figure out, well, who else is eating or is it the time to eat? They know if they're hungry and if they need to eat. And we as parents, sometimes we don't respect that. And then they end up using external cues more than their internal gauges.
From where are you obtaining these recipes you keep talking about?
Lots of experimenting in the kitchen.
A lot of experimenting. Jen has kitchen hours at our kitchen every Monday. So if you are in the area and you want to drop by and see Jen, she's often experimenting in the kitchen and testing new recipes, and you can come in and talk with her and learn about what she's cooking. We have some favorite places that we go to for recipe ideas, and we may tweak the recipes a little bit. Some are family favorites. We really go everywhere to find our recipes. And what's nice is when we kid test them, we know if they're really good. And if they're an utter fail, then we usually will move on and try something else.
Jen, when you're experimenting with recipes, what are you looking for to begin?
One of the first things I look for is ingredients that everyone can find. I don't want it to be difficult. I don't want a list of 25 ingredients because, for the most part, we're talking about families who need to get dinner on the table quickly. I want it to be relatively simple, but I also want there to be some jobs that kids can do, whether it's ripping up the spinach or measuring the spices. So all of those things are important. And sometimes we look for crockpot meals or something that can be prepared ahead of time and put in the refrigerator. So it depends what we're looking for, but I want it to be simple. I want it to be easy. I want it to be very, very healthy and use good quality ingredients.
So would there be a time when you see a recipe online or in a cookbook and you think this would be a good base to work from, and then you're thinking of how to tweak it to meet all of those?
Yes, definitely. We do that quite a bit. And sometimes we also have people come in and bring us ideas, and we fix those a little bit as well, just to bump up the nutrition just a bit.
Jen brought up an interesting point about getting the kids involved. And a lot of times parents come to us saying, I don't want to cook because it's just, it's such a chore. And we try to really get families to think about cooking in the kitchen as family time and really spin it in a more positive way where they're spending quality time mm-hmm. in the kitchen making a delicious meal together. And that way it feels like less drudgery and more like quality time.
Yes, the meal begins when you start to cook together or gather the ingredients either.
Right.
You know, go to the farmer's market together and pick out the vegetables.
It begins to sound fun instead of drudgery.
There we go. That's what we want.
When we come back, we'll continue our talk with pediatrician Namali Fernando and Jen Miller about the Dr. Yum Project. I'm Susan Larson from Fredericksburg.today, and you're listening to Town Talk on WFEA News Talk 1230. we're talking about good eating habits, eating healthy for the family, for children, with pediatrician Namali Fernando and Jen Miller of the Dr. Yum Project. Good morning again to both of you.
Good morning. Good morning.
What happens when you're on the road traveling? What advice do you have for car trips, long car trips, and also handling holidays away from home when you might not have that same ability to control the menu?
Oh, I'll take that one.
Yes.
Okay, Jen, take it away.
One of the things I love to do to get ready for a trip is to pack some healthy snacks for the car. That's one of the times that we tend to drive into gas stations or, you know, those fast food
drive-throughs.
Yes. And an easy way to prevent that is to pack some healthy snacks, some yogurt, some almonds, some small things that are easy to manage. Also, you know, be gentle, because it's not every day that you do these things, and some treats sometimes are okay. So as long as you can stay in moderation and make the best choices that you can at restaurants, then let it go and have a good time. I think that's important.
And what about if you're visiting family or friends out of town?
That can be a touchy subject.
Challenging. That can be a little challenging.
You know, food is very personal. And sometimes family members that you're visiting may have different eating styles than you do. And again, I think it's one of those where you just have to do the best that you can. Sometimes a little bit of advance notice to family can help. So guess what? We're eating, our kids are doing great, eating some new healthy fruits and vegetables. Maybe you guys can have those things on hand so you can see how great they're doing. But also know that you don't see family all the time, and just to enjoy them as much as you can and make the best choices when you're with them.
It's also a great opportunity to share your favorite new healthy recipe.
Yes.
So have the ingredients ready, and you can show them what you've learned to cook.
Exactly.
You mentioned 90-10. Tell us, what is 90-10?
So we try, there's no way to be perfect. There's just no way to do it. And you can beat yourself up and try to do everything perfectly, but there's just no way to do it. So it's important to have moderation and make good choices 90% of the time. But then that other 10%, it's okay to have a treat.
And really, this is all about good health. We began the program by talking not only about childhood obesity, but other conditions that you're seeing in your pediatric practice that you say that are caused by bad food choices. What are some of those examples?
A typical example is ADHD. So there's a subset of kids that are really very sensitive to artificial food dyes and preservatives. And if you clean up their diet, their attention can really improve. I see a lot of kids with chronic constipation because they're eating a very fiberless diet, and that chronic constipation can lead to other issues like chronic urinary tract infections and bedwetting. And those things can be distressing for kids and cause other psychological problems. And so it's a lot of times if you connect the dots backwards, you end up looking at the diet. And so for many conditions that I see kids present with, I will start with, well, what are your children eating? And I find that we can make improvements in their symptoms if we clean up their diet.
What about beverages? What should kids be drinking? I'm sure this has an impact also. Laugh, laugh.
Soapbox, yes.
So many children are drinking far too many calories. And it has a big impact not only on their weight, but also on their dental health. I see a lot of young children with very early dental disease and cavities. And so we really try to encourage kids to drink water. Interestingly, there are a lot of people who don't like to drink water, and it always surprises me. So what we do in our kitchen is we make fruit water. Do you want to tell her what our fruit water situation is?
Always. I love to put fresh mint in there first because it's delicious. And one of my favorite combinations is limes and frozen strawberries with the mint. In the water, you just put it right in there, put some ice on top, fill up the pitcher with water, let it sit for half an hour. It's delicious. And you can make any combinations. People like cucumber and mint. People like orange, just frozen berries crushed a little bit. It's a great way to enjoy your water and have a little bit of sweet without adding any sugar or calories.
That's a good idea. I'm one of those people who does not like to drink water. I'm very sensitive to the different flavors water has and different textures water has. So I have found that certain filters and certain fruits and vegetables will help me drink water. Yes. So that's a good tip, too.
Yeah, excellent. We have the kids make their own fruit water in the beginning of our camps, and then they just sip on that throughout the day.
I would think, too, that getting the children involved that way, it's fun. It's they're playing house, they're playing cooking, but now they're actually involved in the real thing.
Absolutely. And they can actually go out into our garden and pick the herbs they want to use in their fruit water or their salad dressing. And it gives them a lot of control over the flavors and the textures and makes them more excited about their food.
And walking through our magical green door, which is what a lot of the parents come to realize, is once the kids get through that door, we take the pressure off. There's no pressure that this is your dinner and you have to eat it. And all of a sudden, they have more fun. They relax, and they're more willing mm-hmm. to try things that the parents say, oh, they don't eat that. And we just smile.
Right.
And at the end of class, the parents come back and say, what? They ate that?
You have a lot of programs available. Dr. Yum has a lot of programs available to help parents and children learn. And before we get into those, where else can our listeners go for information about all that we're talking about? Maybe they've said, oh, I want to see those recipes, or I want to remember that water.
You can find all of the information on volunteering, on our recipes, on our programs at dryum.org. And there is just a plethora of information on that site. And we're hoping that your listeners will go to it. We really need volunteers.
Yes.
We have a lot of partnerships with different programs, and we need our community support to make those partnerships happen. For instance, Big Brothers Big Sisters is an organization we partner with, Stafford Junction, Hazel Hill, Young Lives. These are organizations that serve a lot of children who often are most at risk for diet-related disease. And we are very fortunate to partner with those groups, but we need help in terms of volunteer hours and also financial support to make those programs happen.
What would volunteers do?
Oh, we can put volunteers in lots of ways.
Not only dishes, but tasting as well.
Yes. Okay. Jen puts them to work in the kitchen.
Yes, I do.
And it's a lot of fun. They can do whatever they're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And we have a volunteer portal now. So if you're on the website, you can sign up online, figure out what your strengths are, what your interests are, if you like to garden, if you want to help us with our website, if you want to be in the kitchen with the kids. And then you can schedule yourselves for different volunteer opportunities. We've made it very easy.
Much fun. And we'll also include the link to the website and some information with your picture that we'll take later on WFEA's Facebook page and on Fredericksburg Today's Facebook page. Now, let's talk about some of those programs that are available for families to participate in.
So first and foremost, we have our cooking school. And we don't just teach kids how to cook. We have programs for all ages, starting from our baby food class. We have a first foods class where we teach families how to make food for their newest eaters. We have our preschool camps and classes. We have a lot of themed classes, so we try to give classes a fun theme. So we'll call it a pirate party, and we'll make pirate food. All healthy food, of course. But kids can come dressed up. We had a fairy tea party, and all the kids came in wearing little fairy wings and had a great time.
It was wonderful.
And then we have our kids' classes, which are 7 to 12, where kids cook independently. And then we have a lot of adult classes, too, including our Parenting for Wellness class, which is really tailored for families trying to jumpstart their healthy eating. But if you want to learn how to can, or if you want to learn how to make curry, you can come to our kitchen as an adult and learn those things through our programs. As well.
I need the empty nesters class.
We can make that happen.
Well, I used to be so good cooking for my family, farmer's market, fresh ingredients, cooking together. And now that I'm an empty nester cooking for one, yeah, I'm being convicted today just listening to you all.
We'll get you back.
Yes, right.
Get you back in the kitchen.
Right. We also have a preschool program, which I mentioned before. It's a preschool curriculum where we teach teachers how to teach nutrition in the classroom, and we have 16 participating schools. We've given the curriculum to for free. That's a big program for us, which we hope to expand. And then we have our website. So we really are pushing for a very exciting website update where we hope the Dr. Yum project will become a part of people's daily routine. So we're making recipe builders so that you can learn how to make 5 or 6 basic dishes with the ingredients that you have. And we're really excited about this because we're going to be addressing things like food allergies for families who have kids with food allergies, heart-healthy recipes, recipes for people who need extra calories but want to do that in a healthy, whole food sort of a way. So we're really hoping to work with lots of local physicians and other leaders to make this website update possible, and it's very exciting for us.
Very good. And that will be a great resource because you don't have to have a lot of cookbooks around. If you love cookbooks, that's fine. But you can just go to the website and find recipes.
Put in your recipe builder, get a shopping list that you can take with you, either printed or on your mobile phone. So we really want to make things easy as possible. We know families are busy and they're challenged. We want to make cooking really easy and fun.
Very good. On that, do people come to you with recipes that are, maybe are family favorites and ask you if they can tweak them?
Yes, macaroni and cheese, mashed potatoes. Yes, how can we make this better? Someone asked me green bean casserole the other day.
Well, I need that one. And what do you tell them?
What I try to do is talk about using really good quality ingredients first. If they're going to use a dairy product, try to use the best quality dairy product that they can find. You know, use fresh green beans, use fresh onions, those types of things. So bump up the recipe just a little bit and one step at a time because it doesn't need to be perfect.
And also rethinking recipes in new ways. So we had our favorite teens from Stafford Junction that came a few weeks ago, and we had a burgers and fries meal. So our burgers, though, were quinoa black bean burgers, and we made sweet potato fries. So just rethinking those old favorites in new ways with healthy ingredients can be a lot of fun. And the kids loved it.
And at that same class, we also showed them a 3-month-old fast food meal that looked exactly the same as it had when it was purchased. So it was wonderful to show them.
Are you serious?
Yes. It's still sitting in the kitchen.
Wow.
Yeah. No mold at all.
What about if you want to occasionally go to a fast food restaurant, or you're a teen going out with friends at night? Is that again when you go, you think about the 90-10 idea? Choose what, make some different choices. Any advice?
Health coach Jen Miller, what's your answer for that?
You know, as I have learned more about food, I'm really so picky about what I put in my body now from a health standpoint. So I feel like in that way, I don't even want that in my body because I know I'm not going to feel good. And it, for me, it's just not worth it anymore. It's taken me many years to get to that point. So I think that, you know, make the best choices that you can in the moment and have the goal of doing good things, putting good things in your body.
Getting healthy is a journey.
Yes.
And it doesn't happen overnight. So, and it continues. No matter how healthy you think you are, you can still do a little bit better and try a little bit, try something new. So it just depends on where you've met people. We meet people who are just in the very beginning of the journey, and just to make these small changes of rethinking how they're eating is huge. We meet people who are already very healthy. So you have to tailor those changes to where the person is.
And people shouldn't feel guilty, I would imagine, for if they're making an effort.
That's right.
Yes.
Be kind to yourself. Congratulate yourselves for the wins that you have.
That's right.
And know that you can always do better.
I tend to be a black and white person, so I would be, okay, I have to do it. It's all or nothing.
Yes.
But what I'm hearing you say is that's not the case.
No, it's think not. Of it as a dimmer switch, not an on-off button, but as a dimmer switch. You try to do a little better
analogy.
And a little better.
Yeah. We'll be sharing so many healthy tips. We have a yumathon coming up.
Oh, what is a yumathon?
Yumathon. So the community give, as many of your listeners may know, is on May 5th. And that's a nationwide day of giving where people can donate to their favorite local nonprofits. And we're hoping that the Dr. Yum Project will be one of those. And so that's 24 hours. And in 12 of those hours, we'll be hosting a yumathon where people can come to our kitchen and learn healthy tips and tricks for healthy eating throughout the day. And it's going to be just a fun extravaganza of food at the Dr. Yum Project Kitchen.
That's fun. And I know at the Community Give that every hour they have special prizes that they give for the nonprofit who had the most donations that hour. And they pull names, all kinds of ways to maximize givers' dollars on that day.
Yes.
And I just want to remind nonprofits that are listening that the deadline to apply for this year's second annual Community Give is this Friday, April 10th. And then the Community Give is on May 5th. And the Dr. Yum Project will be a part of that. When we come back, we're going to wind up our conversation with the Dr. Yum Project on activities that you can participate in and just a review of what we've been talking about. I'm Susan Larson from Fredericksburg Today Online News, and you're listening to Town Talk on WFVA News Talk 1230. We're going to have a Yumathon in Fredericksburg on May 5th at the Dr. Yum Project. That's on the Community Give Day.
Yes.
And during that time, people can stop by your kitchen and learn more about the Dr. Yum Project and try foods. That sounds fun,
yes.
The Yumathon. Then you also have summer camps coming up for the Dr. Yum Project.
That's right. Actually, today we're starting off a week of spring break camps, which are full. And so our kitchen's going to be very busy, but we still have a lot of spots left in our summer camps, which are very popular. So if any of your listeners are thinking about signing up for those, I would visit dryum.org and see what's still available. But we have a lot of fun. As we mentioned, we have a teaching garden, too. And in the summer, our garden gets really busy. So we spend some time in the garden as well as the kitchen, and the kids just have a ball.
Who does the planting of that garden?
So we were very fortunate this year that the folks at C&T Produce took an interest in our garden and very generously donated all the plants for our garden and helped us plan out where all the best places would be for certain plants. So they've been out several times helping us plan the garden and plant it. So we've planted a lot of our early greens, broccoli, cabbage, kohlrabi, I think, onions, kale, lots of kale.
Yes, lots and lots.
We're happy about that for many, many plates of kale chips, hopefully in the future, Swiss chard. So they'll be back several times to help plant more summer vegetables, too. So we're very, very grateful to the growers at C&T Produce, Tracy Bernard, who really took an interest, Dee Bernard, who took an interest in our garden. And hopefully we'll have a big harvest this year. We have a small garden, but we think it can probably yield a lot of vegetables with their expert help.
Yes. And your summer camps, what ages are they for?
So we have preschool camps where kids can attend with a parent, and those are from age 3 to 6. And our older kid camps are 7 to 12-year-olds, and those are a drop-off camp.
And do they run for a week at a time? How does that work?
Some of the camps are, we varied the times to really help parents find one that's going to work for their schedule. Some, the preschools might be Monday, Wednesday, 2 weeks in a row, or they might be 4 to 5 days in the same week. They have to just check our schedule and find the one that works for their family.
And they can find you on the web. Give us your web address again.
It's dryum.org.
Dryum.org. But then you're also on social media.
We are. We have a very active Facebook page where we post a lot of articles and recipes and when we have new activities coming up. And that is Dr. Yum, but Dr. spelled out D-O-C-T-O-R-Y-U-M. And then you can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Pinterest and on Instagram, which is apparently where all the teens hang out.
Yes, that's what they tell us.
until we as adults go there, and then they will go somewhere else.
That's right.
So any information that anyone needs on Dr. Yum, they can just go to the website, and it's all there, including the links to your social media. Now, you have a secret. You want to just give a, you're unveiling a secret. You're just giving
a little
teeny peek today?
I think a little bit.
So we will be unveiling a surprise video campaign to raise awareness of our mission. And we'll be unveiling that on May 1st. So between May 1st and May 5th, we're hoping the campaign will catch on. And we'll unveil that on the Chris and Dee show on Monday. Sorry.
On Friday.
Friday, mm-hmm. May 1st.
Friday, May 1st, mm-hmm. The D Show, D on B101.5, which is sister station to WFVA 1230. There will be an unveiling of something fun and exciting from Dr. Yum. And that's all we're going to say today. And
Jen said, tune in.
You said, don't let you get started because you'll let it slip.
That's right. I'm not talking about it.
We just have a few seconds left, but tell us, Dr. Fernando, what this basically is about is health for children, eating well for health for children.
Exactly. And really the overarching mission is a culture of wellness and bringing that culture of wellness to the families of Fredericksburg so the kids can live long and healthy lives.
Thank you so much. We've been talking about Dr. Yum. I'm Susan Larson. This is Town Talk.